You're listening to Sound Poetry. I am your host, David Gilmore. You're listening to Sound Poetry on KTAH 101.9 Radio Tacoma. Today, I'm going to present a poet who is well known as a songwriter and a singer of Americana-styled music, what used to be more commonly called folk music, and Northwesterners will clearly know him, as I mentioned, Steve Niebuhl. Steve, welcome to Sound Poetry.
Well, thank you, David. It's good to be here.
Steve and Christy Niebuhl, well known in the Northwest as folk singers of Americana. And many of you will know them from many venues where they have played. But they're also travelers. And for many years, they lived in Alaska. Many years there cutting their teeth in bars. And we'll probably hear some narrative poems that will give us good evidence of that experience. But also, Steve has traveled with Christy through the folk clubs of the United Kingdom and even onto the continent from time to time. So we're going to have quite a large variety of poems, some long narrative, but Steve is going to entertain us with his poetry rather than his lyric songwriting today. So let's see what you've chosen today, Stephen, to get us rolling.
Thanks, David. I'm going to start off with a poem that is a narrative about our days in the far north. The name of the poem is Follow You. In those days, our lives were squarely centered on four wheels, taking always to flight on ice-covered highways through the snow-covered landscapes that spoke to us as we traveled. You said you were with me for the adventure. We had adopted a cliff-jumping style, always hoping that the heights we were falling from would afford us a branch to catch on our way down. That winter, we slid from Anchorage to Whitehorse, then spinning on further down the icy highway, all the way out to Dawson City, reciting Robert's service. You pushed the pedal to the metal, the ice not being a large enough thrill by itself. You, in your muskrat coat, standing under the stars, held in fascination by northern lights, running across the sky in a place where if you stand too long, you turn into a pillar of ice. Maybe it was your adventure all along, I just along for the ride, playing guitar through the long Alaskan nights, drinking with the miners, dog mushers, our lives winking like an amber light at another icy intersection. We immersed ourselves in that world. Jimmy bought us more to drink until the night was gone, time evaporated. He took us into the White Channel mine. Next day, an earthquake buried it. Dog mushers came from Fairbanks, running up the Yukon River to listen to us sing at the El Dorado Hotel. They said that if you pulled up the floorboards, you would find the gold the sourdoughs had spilled in their drunken fury. I drove my spell, wearing the beaver hat you had sewed for me along with mucklucks. They kept me warm through those long dark nights. I would, even now, follow you anywhere.
An experience of the Alaska wilds, and today Steve and Christy are still stalwarts traveling wherever they might go, but a poem like this doesn't always come up in their songs, so you're going to hear a variation of the life that you know of them. If Steve and Christy are people you have heard singing. So how do you find writing poems different from lyrics, Steve?
I give myself a little bit more freedom with poetry, I guess, in some respects. In other respects, I guess I don't. When I'm writing a song, I like things to have more rhythmic structure than I often will have in a poem. And also, I feel more committed to saying what I have to say in a succinct fashion that can be delivered in a song. Using music, you can just lose people in the music and have them not understand your lyrics if you don't make them straightforward enough. Whereas in a poem, you figure that somebody can go back and stop and read over a line a couple of times if it isn't immediately evident what I'm saying. So I guess that's the difference in songwriting and poetry.
So anyway, you have written lyrics that have to do with your Alaskan experience. Did you write largely the lyrical songs long before you wrote the poem that you just read?
Yes.
So this poem is something that comes from latter-day reminiscence rather than in the experience of.
Right.
Yeah. Well, that's a good idea, because when you're behind the wheel, although you might be thinking poetry, you've got to really be concerned about where you're going, especially if it's in a foreign country.
I have been known to do that. I always have a notebook in my pocket, and Christy she gets upset with me when I pull that out and start writing while I'm driving it. And she's absolutely right, but I think we've just been lucky. We have never had a major accident. We've never crashed in hundreds of thousands of miles of icy highways.
Yeah. Well, the roundabouts are not the place that you'd be writing down your poems, that's for sure. And the poem Singer's Night is a long narrative about a trip to the UK where you had to encounter many of them.
Right. Yeah. This is about a year when we had we were staying at an Airbnb and we would trek out from the Airbnb to different clubs, and so we were going to a singer's night this night. I'll read about it.
You know, sure.
So this is singer's night.
Okay.
We ran the car through the warm summer UK night. The air was soaked with the rain that had been falling all day. We breathed it in, felt it in our clothes like Florida. The sun was not yet set, though the moon was waiting hopefully in the clear Yorkshire sky. The engine whined, gears rolling fast in their box. There was a sense of urgency as we rolled through the towns. The narrow lanes left no room for error, or that's what they thought. The cars parked along the road like UPS delivery men were filling half of our lane. We rolled by them, having automobile intimate experiences, mirrors almost touching in the sun-falling sky. I was obsessed with gears, listening to the engine like it was a small bird singing in the Yorkshire evening, listening attentively, watching the stoplights, road markings, fellow travelers. There is an electric thrill to not knowing what awaits you at your destination. We wound through the suburbs, onto the city, around the roundabouts, around and around, 1, 2, 4, 5, 3, 2, 1, 0, around and around, finding the way out again like a garden maze, each one with words on signs, Bradford, Skipton, on and on, Leeds and places we had never heard of. There were small places with sheep grazing in the fields, old people walking in the wet evening air, children screaming goodbye to the sun as the sun prepared to leave us. It left an evening glow on a horizon that brought magic to the coming night. We crazily churned, buzzed, whined, shot through the wet Yorkshire evening. Folk clubs can be strange animals. You never know what the herds have been grazing on. This one was unplugged, unnerving the electric bass player. They can be entire rooms filled with melodeons, concertinas, ukuleles, instruments from long ago, instruments of the right now that we have never seen. They can be rooms filled with guitars from Ireland, filed, London, faraway Martin guitars, Japanese, Fenders from the 70s, or small Washburn guitars from the early 20th century. The fat man may be singing the blues while a skinny guy plays the cajon. The shy woman sings her classical piece, slightly out of tune. The young singer-songwriter somehow seems a little bit out of place after an ancient woman sings a Geordie song that she learned from her father on a trip to Southampton in 1952. They were going to the Isle of Skye. Then her father was lost in the hotel, came back to their room with whiskey on his breath, and taught her this song about men made redundant in the damp northeast air. The young man sings about a lost love, as young men do. The ancient Geordie woman smiled, remembering a young man who in 1960 sang her father's song at a folk club in Conwy, Wales. She remembers his blue eyes and soft hair as she listens to the young man sing about how she left him in the warm UK night, never returned, was not forgotten, how his heart hurts. These clubs can be filled with rock and roll wannabes, buzzing with their acoustic guitars, holding them down around their waist, playing them like they are pretending to play Fender Stratocasters, Telecasters, feeling the cheap pine box against their hand. After all, they are all made by the same Chinese peasant in a factory near Shenzhou. They growl and sing Robert Johnson, Keith Richards, The Beatles, Kinks, a song about a pub in Barleyville that they played long ago. Some clubs have only singers and no instruments are allowed, none of the shring-shring of guitar strings or the honking of the melodeons, concertinas, only voices raised in song. The preference is for ancient songs about an England long ago, mythologized, sterilized, minor songs about a strike or a cave-in, mine explosion, descriptions of the living conditions, the loo in the middle of the courtyard, the young girl suffering through the indignity of it all. The path starts to slow, the car erring as I shift into fourth, third, second, first, slow at the entry to the roundabout, nobody coming. And I run right in, winding it up through the gears again, running out the other side. It starts to feel like an old English town, and I know we are there. We wind through the narrow, narrow streets, being careful not to go into a one-way road or pedestrian zone. We slow and stay in second gear, looking for the place we will know when we see it. The navigator has written down the name of our destination. We park beside the canal, which tempts us with a canal-side pub, still lit with sun that is running away to the west as far as it can gather momentum. I want to take a picture of the canal boats sitting quietly in a slightly yellow or green scene. I put it in my head. Better than a camera, I can see it any time. As we arrive, panic slowly fades to confidence. The first player plays rock and roll. They allow electric bass players. They all smile as the Americans take the stage, then they take it back from them with their applause. The black car winds through a night lit by street lamps. No dark rural driving, but no other cars to watch the black car run through the humid, warm Yorkshire night.
That's certainly a road trip and a visit to probably several clubs that you're still aware of as you think back on that trip. Many, many different forms of music played. And so your experience in driving through the UK, I believe it was often from Scotland down to the very south counties, right?
Yeah, we covered pretty much the whole of the UK in many regards. When we were booking, I remember talking to a fellow on the phone, and this guy said, "Oh yeah, I got your promo package." You know, he said, "They're very good. You know, I really like it." He says, "But my club would skin me alive if I booked you." You know, he said, "We only do traditional English." And so these clubs are, some of them are traditional English. They have blues clubs. They have clubs that are all Americana. Most of the ones that we played did a variety of things. There's some of them that only do comedy. It's just such a dense population in the UK. You find every interest everywhere you go, you know. And I also think that the club culture there is fairly unique.
So Steve has not published very many of his poems, but recently he put together a collection called Remembering the 21st Century, as though we're long past it, but there's still decades of it that we can remember. And so we're going to read now some poems from this new chapbook that Steve has put together. And we're going to begin reading about the 21st century, remembering the 21st century.
That, of course, is tongue-in-cheek. I just thought that the years of the pandemic have been so unique. I think that when somebody writes a history of the 21st century, that may be a prominent part of the history. So, but this is remembering our little part of the 21st century. Remembering the 21st century, I hear the 21st century whispers of Taliban, 911. We never used to hear about Iraq. Well, that was one time back in the 90s. We were hoping that was all done. It seems like you never hear about Al-Qaeda anymore. What happened to those guys? I guess they're sitting on their front porches polishing their shoes, telling stories about old Osama, how Dad was part of the original jihad, running from the Americans, hiding in caves. Those were the days. George Bush. Remember him? I think Barack Obama stole his thunder. Now every day all we ever hear about is Donald Trump. Some people like him. A lot of people don't. Whether you like him or not, Trump is too often in the headlines. He is always leaking avarice, revenge on someone. I used to believe Barack Obama. At least he had good intentions. You don't hear about New York the way you used to. Now they talk about Seattle. What a foreign place that is. On TV, you see the Space Needle. Everyone knows what Puget Sound is, and Mount Rainier, like there aren't any other mountains near Seattle. I heard yesterday the ice caps are melting faster. They keep saying the ocean is getting deeper. I'm not. When I go to the beach, it looks about the same. It didn't snow as much. Maybe that's why this new bug cropped up. What do they call it? Someone is going to make a movie called COVID-19. Maybe we'll have witches in it.
Play on the COVID and the covens. Yeah, good idea. The witches of COVID.
This is the COVID-19 section of my reading, which was a lot of my chapbook. But I found this other poem that's not in the chapbook that I thought that I would read. It's called Fire. Fire. The news came like fire, ripped through our lives that year we watched as the forest burned. We were left with just the blackened trunks of what had been an active life. The creatures of that forest screamed along the empty streets, built their own cities on the parking strips. The apocalypse had arrived. We stayed in our cave, isolated from our fellow humanity, rebuilt our lives in new forms, structures we had played with before. It was a plague that was upon us. Death, disease, helplessness were the words that came down, rained upon us daily, where we listened to them echo off the walls of our cave. Yesterday I saw a green shoot popping out on a tree, more coming up in the soil. We are beginning to find the pieces of our lives that we had deserted in the burning forest. Life is coming back, even in the grip that the plague still holds upon us. The resilience of humanity moves me.
Right. Your concern for social issues is quite noticeable in many of these poems that you've written. And so if we go on with the COVID poems, are you going to read then the COVID Railroad poem next, right?
Right.
Okay.
The COVID-19 Railroad Company 2020. The holidays linger, the days getting longer. Sun today, rain tomorrow. Winter is heading into spring days. COVID-19 rules with COVID-19 rules. We push our fear down, leave it moldering in dark places where life is careening through lightless tunnels out of control. We are riding in a crazy train. There are clowns dancing on the roof of our railroad conveyances. There's an oompah band in the club car where there is no room left for drinkers. The engineer is dressed as death. The purser and fireman are dressed as demons. We sing whatever songs come into our heads as loud as we can. We don't know where this train is going. We only know that we are on it, that the last tunnel we went through had pictures of corpses painted on the tiles of the wall. There were 300,000 faces, then an arrow pointed towards the light at the end of the tunnel. The next tunnel had faces blinking in and out of sight on the tiles. We thought we saw our own faces there. The train was too loud for us to see. The light was too bright for us to hear our own voices singing through the surreal railroad night.
A horror, scene of horrors. It did seem at times that there was much horror in the world during those 3 years that seemed like a decade. And still going on, of course. It's not over. Do you think there's going to be an era of the COVID that we'll look back on in the same way that you're talking about remembering the 21st century?
You know, I really wonder about that. I remember when the news had pictures of Italians who had been isolated in their homes. I remember one night there was a guy singing opera from his from the balcony of his apartment, and they were one of the first countries to get hit really hard with this virus, and they didn't have enough respirators, and the staff in the hospitals were deciding who would live and who would die. And they were the first ones with the corpses piling up. And then later on, the corpses piling up so high in New York that they had to have refrigerator trucks in. So yeah, I think that, but when you talk to people about it, people already seem to have forgotten that, or they just ignored that. I don't know what other people are going to think, but I know what I think. And I know what my experience was.
Well, writing poems about it is going to help memorialize, to help people to remember the situation that happened in our time. The influenza of the 20th century, however, was pretty much forgotten. Do you think America has a kind of cultural amnesia?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, my grandfather died in that first flu pandemic in 1918, and so I always remember it. But anyway, you know, I would like to read My Robot.
You want to read something more in the mirthful vein, rather than
My Robot.
Okay.
We'll
go to the robot then.
There's a lot of talk about robots.
You're going futuristic, you know, here. Well, not exactly. Coming into the present here.
Oh, well, people have robot vacuum cleaners now, you know, and they're robotizing factories, and also there are a lot of virtual robots. Everybody has smart speakers that you talk to, and they respond.
Well, have you a robot that you have conversations with yet?
Yes.
So here it is.
My robot. I'm feeding my robot. He doesn't need chocolate. He's not my friend, pet, or sycophant. What he does, he does. He searches the internet, socializing with the other robots. He may be good friends with your robot. He may prefer the robot with someone else's data. Sometimes he makes mistakes. I know. We all think robots are supposed to be perfect. Well, they're not. The problem with them is, I suppose it's not really their problem. Well, it is their problem. They were programmed by humans. Then after they are programmed, they think they are so damn smart. They go around collecting data here, collecting data there. It turns out it is the wrong data. Nobody told them. They're just doing what they think they have been told to do. someone left out a number here, a number there, changing the program. Maybe the human wanted the robot to make that mistake. More than likely, the human didn't even know they were putting numbers, symbols, little black meaningful things in. My robot really screwed up today. I'm not sure what I'm going to do. So what am I going to do? Nothing. I love that damn robot.
It all comes down to nothing, right? So that there is a kind of funny horror that goes on when you have a robot. So are you going to read now another funny poem? No, not a funny poem. We're going to have a nature poem.
A nature poem. Yeah. The tree. I heard the tree speak to me. It must have been a dream. We all know plants don't speak. It spoke in a deep, rich voice, calm, with it a feeling of deep understanding. I could hear the chainsaws ringing in the background as the tree spoke. You know, he said, to quote the old song, you're gonna miss me when I'm gone. Hell, I already miss me and I'm still standing here. On this day, the chainsaws are getting a little too close for comfort. Just a little word to the wise, I've been here for a long time, or it would be a long time if I were a human. I've been standing here drinking in the sun, carbon dioxide, sweet, sweet water. It has been so beautiful here on this hill, especially as I grew taller, could get up where the air tastes better. I've been able to see, taste, hear a lot from my vantage point. I can tell you that the CO2 levels are rising. Not a bad thing if you're a tree, mind you, but you mammals, you're going to be in a pretty mess in not too long a time. I could hear the chainsaws getting closer. I was starting to like the tree. His voice was so otherworldly. I guess it was otherworldly. What I mean is, I haven't been to another world. I don't have another world. He started talking again. I've seen my fellow trees cut before. I don't think it hurts too much. As I see the houses getting closer to me, the air getting dirtier, the noise. Oh, the noise. Maybe I've just run my course, had enough. I suppose it's time to check out. You mammals, though, thinking you're making things better for yourselves. I've heard the ocean whisper, heard the glaciers scream. You're in a bad place, getting worse. You'd better run. Where are you going to go? Do you have another world you can go to? If you do, are you just going to mess it up like you've done to this one? He was asking me a question. I told him that I don't know. I don't have another world. I apologized for the chainsaws. I told him that if I could, I would stop them. Of course, that was a lie. Of course, I might think about stopping them. But even if I could, would I?
Nature's been slow to give us the wisdom, and or at least we've been slow to accept it. And when songs were written long ago, I talked to the trees, but they don't listen to me, as though the tree should be listening to the human being, whereas you have shown us that the listening should be on the other side. So now we go on with the first COVID. Is this the last of the COVIDs? The first COVID-19 Christmas as your last COVID poem?
Perhaps. No.
No, we're going to go on COVIDing.
Well, eventually, yeah, we're going to get
All
there.
All right.
But the first COVID-19 Christmas. It was coming up on the first COVID-19 Christmas. There were people dying everywhere while the fiddles played, people danced in the malls, lined up to go to the stores, while the virus, like a poisonous reptile hiding in the grass, danced through the air, playing its own tune. We tried to stay put, listen to the virus hum a rattlesnake melody. The unemployed were huddled in their tents, landlords brought to their knees while kings of commerce laughed in their mansions, bought as much as they could as their wealth grew larger. There are many cliches about the comforts of home. At some point, home starts to feel like one of those rooms in movies where the walls close in on you. You want to scream. During COVID-19, there is no one to hear your screams. The ambulances roar through the streets singing their siren song, while the police hide with their donuts, the politicians scheme. We watch Christmas movies where the good guys always win. Disasters only happen to bad guys. We bake more cookies, listen to the seasonal music until we can't stand it anymore. We hope the trucks full of corpses are not holding a spot for us.
Let's hope that you don't have too many more COVID Christmases.
Let's hope not. You know.
So now we're going to change to other locations, and you've written an odd poem called The Call, which comes out of, some of it comes out of one of your song lyrics, which many will notice in the reading of this.
Yeah, of course, The Call was to you, Dave. It was from you, David.
It was from me.
Yeah, from you. And so...
Yes, we've been listening to the Big Roomy Pants.
Oh, yeah, that's right, yeah.
Big Red Smile.
The Big Red Smile, right. The Call. You called late afternoon. I was holding my guitar in my hands when I answered the phone, realized you were in Idaho. You were listening to Ray Davies. I suspect you had tasted a bit of Scotch whiskey. You told me a story of reading my song lyrics to your bedridden wife, lyrics dusty in my head, although I do sing that song sometimes. Now I will think of you when I am singing it, of Susan lying on her bed, thin, hopeful, smiling, as you read to her about the big shoes, the big floppy hat, the two big pants. I will wonder if you ever felt mean, because you could never feel mean in a world like that. Now, could you? If you were dancing in a big green field, everyone dancing with you, they all have a big red smile painted on their face. They have a big red nose. Really? Could you be mean in a world like that? I don't think so. You were in Idaho, had been working in the big grassy yard of your Idaho house, listening to the birds out by the lake while you pulled the weeds. A flock of Canada geese flew over. You could hear them squawking to each other, gossiping about the goose who was taking up the rear on the west wing of the V. You were working hard to get the house ready for the winter that may be there tonight. Then there are cold nights of December, January, February, when the geese have all gone to southern Oregon, Mexico, or are spending the winter in Seattle. They are not going to spend it at 5,000 feet in a small town in the Idaho mountains. You remind me that we are all dying. There is a small laugh there. I wonder why we laugh at the truth. You are going to write poetry that you don't care if anyone ever sees. You will be back here with your words, holding them close, running them through your head until they are a complete memory. You will polish them as if they were a box of silver tableware that was left you by a great aunt who you truly loved as much as the books she gave you. Ray is done singing now. I have set the guitar down, am listening to you talk about how it should be a relief, but it is not a relief, how you just feel tense all the time. Valerie has caught COVID-19, so you can't visit her with a bottle of Jack Daniels, so you will put her in a poem with an osprey that you watched hovering above the lake. The bird lives on a power pole between your two houses. So, you are in Idaho. I am still here, waiting for you to call us once again.
Well, thank you for thinking of me and putting me into verse, Steve. It's not very usual for a person to experience that.
Oh, yeah.
But we have a good relationship over poetry. Steve, yeah, doing so much of the engineering, but also some of the interviewing. And it's really is a pleasure to spend time with so many up-and-coming poets and experienced poets that we have conducted interviews with over the last 3 years.
We've just had some really great poets. It has been inspirational, and also I feel like we are really providing a service.
If you're listening and you're a poet, get in touch with Sound Poetry on KTAH. You've been listening to Sound Poetry. I'm your host, David Gilmore. You've been listening to the poems of Steve Niebel on Radio Tacoma, KTAH 101.9 FM.
And once again, thank you, David.